Going online without ExpressVPN is like confessing your sins at church, but everyone can read your mind. You may not have anything to hide, but is it really everyone's business? This is why everyone needs a VPN, because all your traffic flows through their servers. Internet service providers, including mobile network providers, know every single website you visit. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure, encrypted servers, so your internet service provider can't see your browsing history. ExpressVPN will hide your IP address, making it extremely difficult for third parties to track your online activity. All you have to do is fire up the app and click one button to get protected. I use ExpressVPN personally to protect my online activity from hackers, spammers, and the deep state. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/matter. That's expressvpn.com/matter. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/matter. There's a new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions called Morning Kick. It combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. All you do is mix with water, stir, and enjoy. It tastes like strawberry lemonade, not like ground-up spinach. Morning Kick is part of my daily routine. It's replaced orange juice in my life as the first place I go when I wake up. And since I've been drinking it, I've had better digestion and more energy. For me, that's important now that I have a newborn who, let's just say, doesn't always sleep like a baby. My health is important to me, just like it's important to you. I want to be the best version of myself spiritually, mentally, and physically. If you feel sluggish, it's worth giving Morning Kick a try. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/HARRIS today. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
We are live now on the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. Boy, what a weekend, huh? So the ERLC and the SBC more broadly is in chaos, and so is the country, especially the DNC. And it's the jokes being made about the parallels between Biden being ousted and then Russell Moore being ousted are just too much. I can't handle it this morning. It's just over the top. So we already have people filtering in to the chat. If you have questions or comments, in fact, I'm sure as the podcast is happening, we will probably have developments. Please feel free to post your comments in the chat and I will get to them as I can. So we're going to start off today with the obvious, I suppose, and that is that Joe Biden is not the, well, I was going to say he's not the president of the United States, and that might not be all that far off. He is not running to seek the presidency of the United States, of course, any longer, and he threw his support between to Kamala Harris, as did Hillary Clinton and a number of other big Democrats. And this happened on Sunday. I think that was the thing that annoyed me the most, was on a Sunday. And I remember Ron DeSantis did the same thing. He ended his campaign on a Sunday. And I'm just like, is the Lord's Day sacred? I was actually at a church, the one my wife grew up at. And there's a beautiful spot you can take a walk. And so after church, we went and took a walk with our newborn. And I was getting all the updates, right? And I'm like, man, church just ended. I'm getting all these texts. And so I go on my phone and my wife says, hey, you going to be with us? And trust me, I know when my wife says that, it is time to be with them. And I'm just like, Danielle, this is crazy, though. I mean, Biden just stepped down, apparently, and there's all kinds of developments. And I put it away, though. I said, no, it's the Lord's Day. There's no reason for me to be doing this. And why is this happening on a Sunday? So there's my little vent, my frustration about that. But there's so many. I've never seen so much mistrust in our institutions. There's so many theories about what happened with the shooter. This morning, I don't know if you saw Heritage Foundation posted a screen. Well, it was really a Twitter thread, I suppose, but it was a investigation. It was information from an investigation that they did on devices somehow connected to the shooter. I don't know how they did this, how they had the access to do this, but cell phones, I suppose, would be the devices, and where these devices had been. And things like, hey, this person was in proximity, or this device was in proximity to the shooter. And what do you know? It seems to awfully frequently go right near the FBI building. What's that about? Before the shooting. And there were all kinds of things like that in this tweet thread. You should really go check it out. And so people are just, they don't trust the government. They don't trust what they're being told. And they're wondering what in the world is going on. And I think in an age, this was inevitable, in an age of so much mass communication, cameras everywhere, eyes everywhere, and with the added inability of the deep state to suppress the kind of information that's out there because of outlets like X, let's face it, that changed everything. When Elon Musk bought X, it made it so all the other social media companies also had to kind of lessen their strict anti-disinformation rules because they had to compete with X. And that's really the effect of that is, even on YouTube, there might be a little blurb at the bottom of even this video, who knows, warning you that if I mention the word abortion, this is where you should get your information about abortion. Don't listen to that guy who's talking. Listen to us. There's things like that, but it's nothing like it was after the 2020 election. Do you remember Parler? Parler got shut down. I was shocked. Parler was attracting everyone, all the conservative people, and even people who just were moderate and didn't want the left's narrative were going to Parler, and it got shut down because they relied foolishly on Amazon servers to host their particular social media platform. Well, we have come a long way since then, and I think a lot of it does have to do with the fact that Elon Musk bought X, or Twitter at the time. And so they have to compete with him, and in an age like that, it's hard to keep your story straight. I was watching videos last night of the director of the Secret Service, who was supposed to be protecting President Trump in Congress. And you had both Marjorie Taylor Greene and AOC asking very difficult questions that she simply could not answer. It was frankly embarrassing. And anyone who watches that hearing is left thinking they're lying. Something's off. How do you have a perimeter that's 150 yards? Any hunter knows, I know this, and I'm in the East, okay? We don't take long shots in the East. Out West, when you're shooting at a deer, sometimes you take really long shots, hundreds of yards. In the East, 50 to 100 yards, depending on what you're looking at. But you make sure that you're ready with your rifle for a shot, especially if you're in a field or something, that's 150, 200 yards. And 200 yards, no problem for someone who knows how to shoot. And their perimeter was only 150 yards, not even. That's insanity. That's a level of negligence that almost seems planned. It's hard to believe someone could be that negligent, right? And this is where a lot of the theories and even the idea that there's two gunmen and many eyewitness testimonies saying that some of the expert testimony that now is online, because where else are you going to find it, saying that it looks like camera evidence seems to suggest this. And then you have a flat out denial from the head of the Secret Service. All of this stuff is coming to a head. It's to a point now, and I think this is what's happening even on the left, is a lot of people who were quote unquote moderates or center left, who would have been in Biden's camp even a few years ago, are now so mistrustful of their institutions that they're willing to join Trump in some way. And I don't know whether that's going to be enough to overcome all the illegal migrants who will likely have be registered to vote. That's not cynical, by the way. That's reality, especially if you're someone who lives in a border state. I had this experience earlier this year. I was in California. My grandfather passed away. And we've known this is happening for a long time. My family is from California. I was born in California. We've known exactly what's happening there because it's local news. It's and even if it's not in the local news, it's just what everyone knows locally, that the Democrat Party registers illegal migrants to vote. They give them Social Security cards. They hook them up with the benefits that should be really the sole property of the American citizen who has sacrificed and worked hard, sometimes for generations, to achieve. They'll give them those benefits. I was in California and there was a billboard. It was in Spanish, but I took a picture of it and did the, you know, translate thing. And it was a picture of a Social Security card. I still have it. I probably should have queued it up. I didn't know I was going to go on this rant, but it was a picture of a Social Security card. And this was in right outside of Los Angeles in the Valley. And the caption on it said something like, "We can get you the documents that are even hard to get." You're not seeing that in places that don't have major migrant issues, but there's a lucrative business. It's to the benefit of lawyers to make money to get people these documents. And you say, that's impossible. I remember I posted it and people say, that's not happening. That's impossible. It can't happen. And I said, well, it is. It is. So that's really one of my main questions about the election. I'm pretty positive about the fact that, yeah, there's a lot of exposure going on. The call that Biden made to the campaign headquarters sounds, I'm not saying it's not Biden. I don't know, but it's just like so weird that Kamala Harris almost called it a recording at one point. And it doesn't sound like the Biden from a week ago. And he's supposedly more sick now than he was back then, but he sounds better on the phone, but he can't make an appearance. There's too much that's just weird about all of this. And people are, I think, naturally suspicious. And so it's all coming to a head. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens this election. Are the Democrats able to get enough illegal migrants signed up? I think that's the real question, or at least enough names in swing states, in major cities, to, even if Donald Trump gets the popular vote, to push it to whoever, I don't know if it's going to be Kamala or whoever, but whoever's on the Democrat side. That's going to be the question. People aren't buying the narrative. They can't look at the situation and say Donald Trump is a threat to democracy when they're looking at what the DNC is currently doing to their nominee, who was healthy as a horse up until a week ago, huh? And was never better. And of course, after the debate, that line started faltering, and now we're in a snowball. It's a snowballing effect, with everyone calling for Biden to drop out until he did. So who's really in control? The deep state is in control. The managerial class is in control. And those have always been, I think, the mechanisms in our lifetime that have essentially made most of the decisions in the government. It's managerial elites. James Burnham was right about all of this. Go read what he said during the 1930s and 40s about managerial elites and what was happening. It wasn't a shift towards socialism, which is how still so many of the neoconservatives interpret what happened under FDR. And I understand why they do that. But James Burnham made the point, this isn't so much socialism as it is managerialism. It's not socialism where the people are owning the means of production and making decisions. It's not democracy that socialists like to talk about. This is an elite class, a new elite class that have now ascended to gain a prominent position where they're running essentially everything. And they're very ingrained. It's a very stable system in some ways. And so it's very hard to root them out once they're in. And they will survive Republican presidencies, Democrat presidencies, and other institutions that aren't quite as big as the government, but also have a scale to them, start mirroring this kind of thing. Businesses. I mean, James Burnham talked about that too. Big business also does the same thing. It's not just government. And I would like to suggest to you also big ministry. The regime evangelicals, the Big Eva, evangelical industrial complex, whatever you want to call that, has the same dynamics at work. Managerial elites running these institutions. And there's a stability to it. And they will be there when the SBC president starts his term, and they will be there when the SBC president leaves, because they are there for the long haul and they will support their interests and the interests of their class. And that's the main reason they're there. It's not to support, just like with the deep state, we call it, they're not there to represent the interests of the American people. The denominations and Christian organizations that exist at this scale are naturally going to function in such a way that the people running these things are going to more be about their own interests and the interests of their class than they are the people who actually pay the bills for the denominations. And that's why it's so hard to get accountability, audits, information, answers to questions. All right. Well, if you have questions or comments, put them in the chat. I haven't really even begun to talk about the issue that I want to talk about today, but I wanted to enter with a bang there. That's what I'm seeing, and that's what you're seeing, and I just want you to know I'm seeing what you're seeing. But we are going to talk about the Southern Baptist Convention. We are also going to talk about the ERLC, and I want to really start there, I suppose. So let's start. Let's see. Is that the beginning? It is. With what happened, I guess. I mean, I've already gone over some of this, but national politics. I guess so. We won't start with the ERLC. We'll start with just some evangelical reaction to the national politics that I just described, and then we'll quickly get into the ERLC. But Russell Moore, the right call for our country. Thank you, Mr. President, in response to Joe Biden's resignation on June 21st. That was 2 days ago. 2 days ago. Wow. Feels like a week has happened in those 2 days or more. Mike Pence, President Joe Biden made the right decision for our country, and I thank him for putting the interests of our nation ahead of his own. After the assassination attempt on President Trump and Biden's decision to end his campaign, now is the time for leaders in both parties to protect, to project calm and send a message of strength and resolve to America's friends and enemies alike, that whatever the state of our politics, the American people are strong and our military stands ready to defend our freedom and our vital national interests anywhere in the world. Definitely not striking the right tone there, but this is something he's saying nicer things about Biden than he says about Trump, and he was Trump's VP. Michael Byrd, thank you. And Michael Byrd, theology professor in Australia, the way I know about him is because a lot of the progressive evangelicals in the Southern Baptist Convention and evangelicalism more broadly seem to love Michael Byrd. And when I was a student at Southeastern, he came and did some speeches at the school, as well as some podcast episodes. I think it was more than one, if I'm not mistaken, with Walter Strickland at the Center for Kingdom Diversity at Southeastern. And so that's how I was introduced to him. But for those who don't know, I realize not everyone's on X, but Michael Byrd, that's where he's big, I suppose. He's big in that world. And he said, thank you to President Joe Biden for his service, not only to America, but to the free world, including supporting the cause of democracy in Ukraine. So again, I mean, these people, they're showing their cards is what's happening. Biden is more revered than President Trump to them, even though Biden supports policies that are pretty monstrous and he's been a lousy president. They don't really see it the way that most of you see it. David French says, if it's Harris versus Trump, it's a prosecutor versus a felon. And you can just hear them excited about this. I mean, it's Thibidiane Abuile wasn't on X for, I think, years. It was a while. And all of a sudden he's back. And he said, a lot of us miss it. We now know to miss it. And prayerfully, we'll see it return. And what's he talking about? The pre-Trump political world, So Trump's not going to get back in. And, you know, there's a nostalgia. It seems like they want the defeat of Trump and they want Harris to win. And they're not saying it necessarily directly, but, you know, look at what they're not saying, compare it to what they are saying. And that's certainly the direction they're pushing the needle. Samuel Perry, who wrote a book about white Christian nationalism. So he's one of the big anti-Christian nationalist guys. He said after Biden's withdrawal, Q the racism in 3, 2, 1. Micah Edmondson, who writes for the Gospel Coalition, many Black women and men in majority white church spaces are carefully listening to how their fellow church members speak about VP Kamala Harris. Some questions they ask themselves, do these folks value representation even if it doesn't fit their partisan box? So we are seeing, I think, a return of some of the people, some of the cast of characters that I haven't really seen as prominent for a while, like Thibidiane Abuile or even Micah Edmondson. I mean, he's been saying stuff, but it's now gaining a little bit more traction, or, you know, people are noticing more. And it's the same narrative that we had in 2020. And I think it's because now you have a BIPOC candidate potentially who's going to be the Democratic nominee for president. It's no longer an old white male. So they had a hard time playing the race card, right, against Trump when it was Biden a little bit. And now, well, they can just go to town. Any criticism of Kamala Harris now is going to be the N-word. In fact, I saw someone on X say something completely stupid that if you say minority hire, or not minority hire, sorry, diversity hire, i.e. if you're saying that they were hired because of their diversity, not because of their competence or some other factor, diversity hire, then that is the N-word. That is the N-word. This rhetoric wouldn't have been there, not as strongly at least, if it was Biden who still had the Democratic nomination secured. But now that it's a woman and a quote-unquote person of color, this is going to be one of the main attacks, I think. And you're going to see evangelical people who claim to be that, at least, on the left, carry that water. Now, there was some dissent on this, and I want to just acknowledge that, and I want to frame this for you. So Andrew Walker said, I dissent from the Biden that this, from the idea that Biden, let me start over there. I don't know if I'm not reading this right. I dissent from the idea that this was, there we go, an act of valor by President Biden. Okay. Had he not acted defiantly against the, after the debate, or made it clear months ago that he would not run, that would have been respectable, but let's call a spade, the Democrats want power, democracy is an obstacle. So he's saying what everyone's thinking. Handful of the ultra powerful just took control of things. Every current and future office holder should fear the precedent set in today's announcement. And Clint Presley, who is the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, said, sounds right. Now, I don't need to go over it for people who have listened to the podcast for a long time, but Andrew Walker has certainly over the last 5 years been one of the obstacles in the way of holding SBTS accountable. And I would ask you, with the information I present at the end of this, to assess whether Andrew Walker or even other people that you think are conservative at SBTS, Denny Burke usually gets brought up, whether or not they actually help the cause of conservatism, whether theologically or politically, at their institution when in their own backyard they're unable to say much about the things that they have more control over. Now, I don't expect, I should probably say this, I don't expect every single person at an institution in every position to commit career suicide. Not everyone's going to be a Russell Fuller and sign the Dallas Statement, even though the president of the institution puts a target on your back. And I'm talking about Al Mohler for doing it. People seem to forget that Al Mohler was doing that, even though now he's Mr. Christian Nationalist and all the rest. No, that the same Al Mohler who pumped in CRT and Me Too stuff is the same Al Mohler that just a few years later is now saying how he's a Christian Nationalist and shares a stage at NatCon with Doug Wilson and all this kind of thing. The interpretations of that, I think, are pretty interesting. And some of them, in my opinion, are kind of wild. I don't think, I think certainly there's a shift going on. There's no doubt. I think there's multiple shifts, to be quite honest with you, going on, and realignments, and that's politics. But to say that someone who believed in same-sex orientation and said it was a sin for him not to believe in it, and he repented, at least, of denying it, and now to see him shifting his position back to what it had been previously without even, not even a sense of the fact that, hey, he held a different position for the last decade, right? Seeing Al Mohler do that on multiple issues, the conclusion that you can draw is, I guess you could say, oh, he's getting more right wing. That's one conclusion I suppose you could draw if you wanted to. There's another conclusion that actually makes more sense of someone like an Al Mohler over the course of the last 40 years, though. And that is, he's a chameleon. He's what the liberals said about him in the early 90s, that he's going to shift with the winds just like a flag shifts with the winds. That's who he is. That's, I think, consistent with his character more than anything else. And so here's the question you have to ask yourself in this managerial elite paradigm that we live in. The people who are under him, who signal their approval of him for job security, who are picks of his, who rely on him for their bread and butter, and any clout that they might enjoy, what are they going to do when he makes these kinds of shifts? Well, the logical thing, if you're someone who is about preserving yourself is you're going to shift with him. You're going to make the same kinds of shifts. And so I would just ask you in this audience, be careful, okay? I think we can be cautious optimists. We can look, I've tried to frame it in private chats with guys who are on the right in the SBC by saying, look, if Mueller or one of the guys at Southern does something good, then the way to frame it is, hey, look, even they agree with us. The way to not frame it is follow them. You know, don't let them near the steering wheel. They've already proved they can't drive. They'll crash your car. It just got pulled out of the ditch, supposedly. We're trying to pull it out of the ditch. And you don't want to put them back in the steering wheel. That's foolish, right? So I would just encourage you, the same cynical attitude or just healthy suspicion, let's say, that you have about the government, apply that to these other arenas, please. Just have a little bit of a healthy suspicion there. And so when I see Andrew Walker do that, knowing that Andrew Walker was publicly counter-signaling Russell Fuller heavily when Russell Fuller tried to hold SBTS accountable for critical race theory, knowing that Clint Presley was advocating strongly for the DREAM Act, hired an illegal migrant at his church, knowing that these are who those guys were not that long ago, and they have not come out and said we were wrong about those things, you have to be a little bit suspicious. And I think that suspicion would drive you to seeing it this way, and this is how I see it. There are multiple competing factions in the Southern Baptist Convention, as well as evangelicalism more broadly, and also our nation, or our country, I should say. There are multiple competing factions. You can look and see a broad left and a broad right. That's true. But within those, there's always been competition. But there's also there's groups that we could call a co-belligerent group, but they are after power, or they are after perhaps different objectives, and in a different paradigm, they might look differently. You know, if right now CRT was the hot topic and you had a lot of advantages from being pro CRT, there are people who, with their weak character, would find ways to justify that and remain in their positions at their institutions and accept all the prestige that comes with that. In other words, I'm saying there's people that you have to see them as maybe not as principled as you would hope, or at least be open to that possibility. And that's how I see some of this. It is not unreasonable to ask people who have made bad calls in the past that were not just bad on a private level or small in scale, but major public blunders, to come forward and retract and apologize, or at least admit and own that they made these errors when called out on them. I don't think that's an unreasonable assumption at all. And I know there are those who do, because I've gotten into discussions, even with those that it would agree with many of us who are more conservative in this listening audience. They say, well, you can't expect someone to retract what they've said or to start saying, you know, I was wrong when I said that years ago. And I'm thinking, yeah, you can. Now, the issue with not apologizing to the media or to a cancel mob or those kinds of things, I think has more to do with giving them authority. They don't have the authority to squeeze an apology after you, and you don't apologize to them. They're certainly not God. And if to pick a Catholic analogy, they're not your priest. They're not someone who, you know, you don't owe it to them, and you don't want to put them in that place of authority that doesn't belong to them. But you should probably, since people listened to you, if you're a public figure and took your advice and it wound up wrong or bad and maybe hurt them, you should probably own that. There's nothing that's weak about that. In fact, I think that's a strength when you're able to do that and say, I've learned since then, I've gained wisdom. And I hope you can trust me now, because I am someone who gains wisdom when I look at the results of actions I took that were wrong. And one of those actions on the part of Andrew Walker was trying to block Russell Fuller's accountability from holding sway at the school. So more could be said, but I need to talk to you about this. I've been having a number of conversations over the last day, really. This ERLC thing hasn't even been a day. And I know there's a lot of frustration out there all over the place. It doesn't mean you can't be co-belligerents with a Clint Presley, with an Andrew Walker, with even an Al Mohler. Doesn't mean you can't be a co-belligerent. If they're going to support a position that you support, or a candidate that you support, or, yeah, hey, We could use all the help we can get. But look, I'm not letting you near the steering wheel. I'm not going to run cover for you and just ignore the damage you've done, right? That seems reasonable. But hey, I'll accept the support. Great. All right. Well, we got a lot of people. Let me answer some questions, then we'll get into the URLC stuff. I can't believe I've been podcasting for almost half an hour. Well, I should be able to believe it. People know that this is my tendency sometimes, and I haven't gotten to some of the main topics. But too legit to quit says, what source of punishment? What sort of punishment? Public admonition or more? I think he's responding to this comment. Should not the Russell Moores, the David Frenches, and the whole SBC lot be branded heretics and be punished under a proper Christian theocracy, thought experiment-wise? Okay, well, I don't know if I'd frame it in those terms, but I can dig the desire to hold people accountable, which I think is what Him Fong is getting at. I think Too Legit to Quit asks a good question. What does that mean? And I think it does mean we have to assess the institutional power that we as Orthodox, theological, conservative, political Christians have. And that really is public opinion more than anything else. We have very little representation in the halls of power. We're seeking that in various ways. I'll just give a shout out real quick. I did talk to the head of the Institute for Biblical Theology down in Florida. And, you know, this is one of the things that they're trying to do in some way. And there's a lot of groups trying to figure out what the formula is for producing or inspiring and vetting and getting leaders out there into churches and other places that are actually going to be orthodox and solid and principled and all the rest. So at this point, the main thing we have is public opinion. So that's what it's the court of public opinion. I mean, God's going to judge everyone in the end, but that's what we have. All right. So I don't see too many other questions, a lot of comments. Bring in those comments and those questions as we get into the ERLC, which is one of the main things I wanted to talk about. So the ERLC, and here's a screenshot for those who are watching. Not only is this I'm still reading Brent Leatherwood's, but this is actually going to the ERLC. I'm still reading Brent Leatherwood's reaction to the Kamala Harris endorsement, and I should say the Biden resignation really is what he's talking about here. But this flows right into what we're about to talk about. So I'll just read it. The ERLC. Brent Leatherwood said, not only is this, meaning Biden's resignation, a historical decision, it is the right decision for our nation, despite what some partisans will say. To walk away from power is a selfish act, the kind that has been all too rare in our culture. And this is what Andrew Walker dissented from. He was dissenting from what everyone's saying, the Democrat talking points, but he was dissenting from what the ERLC, which is a Southern Baptist entity, Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, supposed to be representing the interests of Southern Baptists in the public square. They have money to do it. They have legal briefings they file. They get behind certain political initiatives. They are represented at gatherings of different faith groups to represent Southern Baptists in the political sphere. And this is what the president of their organization had to say about Biden's resignation. And it goes along with what we just saw from Russell Moore and others. That they want to frame it as if Biden is this really great, upstanding person. And it doesn't match the reality we're seeing, obviously. It doesn't match what we're the sudden shift from I'm as healthy as a horse to I'm resigning, the dishonesty that seems to be accompanying that with the actual condition that Biden's in. Which the evidence that keeps coming in seems to be this guy must be pretty sick. It must be pretty bad. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, but I'm just looking at some obvious things like he didn't call in a Zoom call. He had to, if it was him, some people are saying now that, they're figuring out that this was AI generated voice stuff, but whether or not it was, I mean, they couldn't show him on camera. Something's off. Something's very off. And there seems to be a lot of less than honest approaches to telling us what's actually going on. This was a Some are calling it a coup, but this was an overthrow of Biden. He didn't have a choice in this matter. That's the bottom line. And so to start lionizing him as this great figure who stepped aside, and it doesn't match reality. I think there is a point to be made that, yeah, I mean, months and months and months ago, years ago, if he would have stepped aside, and he's still going to serve out his term. What does that say about you? Where's the honor there? I'm not qualified to run for president, but boy, I am qualified to serve as your president. Yeah, real honorable. Thanks, ERLC, for using our Southern Baptist money to signal approval for that. So some are saying that this was the thing that got Brent Leatherwood in trouble, because the executive committee for the Southern Baptist Convention, which, as I understand it, is composed of 6 people. There's a board of trustees that has like 30 people or something, but the executive committee makes the decisions, essentially. And there was, you know, those people somehow, we're not exactly sure how this all happened, why there's, you know, no, doesn't seem to be accountability in the SBC. They, without any reason, just said, he's out. He is, we have booted him. And of course, here are the reactions from some prominent Southern Baptists. Michael Byrd, I don't believe, is a Southern Baptist, but he's loved by the left in the Southern Baptist Convention. But you have Karen Swallow Pryor. The Lord has given the SBC over to its sinful desires. May he have mercy on them and on us all. All right, so there's sin. It was a sinful desire to boot Brent Leatherwood. And then you got Michael Byrd. When hatred is a virtue, civility becomes a crime. So yeah, it's hate that caused this, and it's people who think hate is a virtue. And they went after Brent Leatherwood because, man, he's just so civil. And then Russell Moore, shameful and disgraceful, a great Christian man who lived through his children barely surviving a school shooting. Southern Baptist, how much more of this are you going to let go on? You cannot pretend not to see what is happening in your name. Well, I think that's the issue, actually. They are seeing what's happening in their name. Brent Leatherwood's the one that's doing it in their name. Anyway, Russell Moore then says, sometimes the Venn diagram of evil and stupid is a perfect circle. Now, I want you to just sit with this for a moment. You look at that real good, what Russell Moore just said. Absorb what he just said. Because there is a real problem on that side. The institutional leadership on the evangelical left has a problem with really hating, I would say. I don't know what other word to use, but there's an anger issue there of some kind. And that's why it's rich that Michael Byrd is saying it's the haters are the people who booted Brent Leatherwood last night or yesterday afternoon. But where do you see real seething hatred coming from? Russell Moore is angry about this. I mean, and he left the SBC. He's no longer part of it. I thought, you know, this wasn't his thing to care about, but he really does care. And I said to you at the time, I said, Russell Moore leaving the SBC, leaving the ERLC as the president, slamming the door behind him, doesn't mean his influence is gone. Everyone was saying, ding dong, it's over. Great, he's gone. We win. And I said, I don't think you win, because here's the deal. I mean, I'm saying it's good. I'm glad he's gone, but he is going to be now more powerful and maybe even more influential on the SBC in some ways than he was before. And he doesn't represent the SBC with money going to him and him being an official spokesperson, but hey, it's going to be his protege. And it was Brent Leatherwood. That's exactly what happened. You just got someone just like Russell Moore into that position, someone who wants to advocate for red flag laws on the local level, but can't seem to advocate for, you know, this is the same ERLC, I should say, that Brent Leatherwood was there at the time, that can't advocate for a heartbeat bill. You know, this is the same ERLC that wants to cover up and use Southern Baptist resources to cover up the shooting manifesto from the transgender shooter there in Nashville, Audrey Hale. And this is what Southern Baptists wanted, right? This is not what they should be getting from the ERLC. And so Tom Askell kind of dressed him down last convention and tried to abolish the ERLC. it was defeated, but it was a little too close for comfort. And I talked to someone I would consider a friend and an insider to the Southern Baptist Convention after that. And he told me that he expected Brent Leatherwood to resign after that. And he didn't give me a time frame, but Brent Leatherwood is likely going to resign because he's a liability to the SBC. And this didn't mean that the right was going to oust him, by the way. This didn't mean that a move to the right was going to be responsible for getting Brent Leatherwood out of there. It meant that Brent Leatherwood was not careful enough. Brent Leatherwood was too overt in signaling left, and he needed to be smarter about it. It meant that Brent Leatherwood had already lost too much public faith to remain in that position. And so I didn't know. I didn't think that would happen. I was kind of skeptical, to be quite honest. When I saw that, I said, I don't think this guy's going to resign. He just fought tooth and nail for his position. I don't see it happening, but I was open. And then when I saw that happened yesterday, that Kevin Smith, the chair of the executive committee for the ERLC, announced that he was ousted, apparently sent an email to the trustees minutes before making the announcement public. I thought, well, okay, this is it. And the way it was interpreted initially by a lot of people on our side of things who don't want to see social justice, who want to see the ERLC advocating for more biblical priorities in their minds that happen to be more conservative, the interpretation was, great, he's gone, which I get. I totally get. And this was the right. This was the flex of the right. This was how things have shifted. And the SBC is shifting right as well. And there is perhaps some evidence to indicate that in some ways you have some shifts going on. I think a lot of it's a co-belligerency. I think the Southern Seminary crowd has banded together with the actual conservative crowd, who I would consider to be probably like Center for Baptist Leadership, the group that shows up for CBN events, founders, those guys. That's who I would consider to be the real conservative, the genuine article. But the Southern Seminary crowd, you know, found common cause, and the Nine Marks crowd, right? And even some Gospel Coalition people, because remember, the law amendment was also edited, or I should say, that's not the word they use. It was amended by Juan Sanchez, who's on the board for the Gospel Coalition, right? So you got people from Nine Marks, from the Gospel Coalition, and from Southern Seminary, all of whom pushed the needle on all these organizations, at least pushed the needle on CRT, on Me Too, towards the left. And some of those guys are breaking off and forming a co-belligerency with actual conservatives to try to get something as basic as the law amendment passed, right? So that's how I see the shifts happening. There may be, there's a shift in the country, certainly, with a lot of mistrust of the government, and the racism accusation doesn't have the same potent power. In fact, I said earlier this week, I don't think it's going to work to try to call people racist for disagreeing with Kamala Harris. They're just so worn out about that, right? So there are shifts, but I wouldn't be so optimistic to say, like, hey, this is the right. This is because Clint Presley is really conservative or something, you know? Yeah, he disagreed with what the ERL said, or what Brent Leatherwood said in the name of the ERLC. I'm sure that has an effect, but you have to ask yourself, how much of this is disagreement with substance? How much of this is brand management? Optics, that fashion, that kind of thing. How much of this guy's a liability to us? Just like Joe Biden was a liability to the left. Ousting him, right, wasn't the right shift in the Democrat Party. It was because, hey, Biden's a liability. We got to get rid of this guy, right? And so that's what I'm encouraging you to see. Consider the possible parallel, and don't just jump to necessarily this is a right-wing shift. Maybe there is some of that. I'm not discounting it, but believe what your eyes have seen over the past 5 years, right? And don't be so quick. I know we're hungry. We want to be optimistic. We want to win. And I get it. I do get it. So one of the reasons I say what I just said is because of this. Kevin Smith, who is the chair of the executive committee for the ERLC, is on the left, perhaps just as much, if not more, on the left politically than Russell Moore is. How can that be, John? Well, don't know if you remember, I talked about it on the podcast. This was from only, I believe, this was actually at a Southern Baptist convention. It was a Nine Marks event. I think it was 2 years ago. And I'm hesitant to play the audio because I think it might not come through well, but I'm going to try. And if it doesn't, I'll just read for you some quotes. But here's Kevin Smith asking a question of a panel that includes Matt Chandler, pastor in Texas, Mark Dever, the head of Nine Marks, and some others. I think it's impossible, guys. I wanted to see if it was possible to play that, but I think it's just hard. You have to get it in like a editing program to figure out what he's saying. Let me read for you an article that was about what he said. So this is from, there's a number of articles actually about this, but I'm going to read the one from Protestia. So I spoke out of turn. I said Nine Marks event. I thought it was Nine Marks, but this article is saying it was Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary where I went. So they hosted the event. So the panelists were Mark Dever, Danny Aiken, Aaron Menikoff, and then Jonathan Lehman, along with Matt Chandler. So Kevin Smith and Matt Chandler weren't listed on the promo. So anyway, Kevin Smith, who was on the panel, randomly walked up to the stage while another panelist was still talking and whispered something in Dever's ear. And then Smith sat on the edge of the stage until the panelist was done talking. Once finished, Dever gave the mic to Smith so Smith could offer his answer to whatever the question was. This is someone's testimony. It just seemed really strange and awkward because apparently he inserted himself into a panel that he was not part of and then asked a question at the end of the panel in the audience mic too. And he said, I'd love to know what, this is the quote from Smith. I'd love to know what some white brothers think about this. White. And then it's unintelligible. You mentioned 10 years as a window, and I'm less hopeful 10 years later. So I guess 10 years as a window to diversify the SBC. I think some Southern Baptists lost their minds when a black man was elected president. Not all, but some. I think some Southern Baptists were loving to black people beginning in 2012 with the killing of Trayvon Martin. I don't mean agree about politics or policy. I just mean giving a darn that somebody else is hurting who is supposed to be your brother or sister in Christ. And I think some Southern Baptists just went bent over and became political whores with this whole Trump stuff. That's the line. And if black inerrant, so he goes on, let me just skip ahead. I just wonder if white brothers think this has been kind of crazy black-white stuff going on, Asian, Hispanic, just people who aren't white feeling like they're tolerated, but not really embraced. And so he later on, let's see, I guess this is also him. I feel that like maybe the last 8 to 10 years, the insensitivity and difference concerning the supposed pain of brothers and sisters has not been a good testimony of Christianity. When a black man is incensed or wounded about racial injustice in the U.S. or excessive force used by police because someone is black, we can't be indifferent to that if we say we are the family and household of God. This is, and I guess there's more. Let's see. During the Baptist 21 panel, so this was another panel at the Southern Baptist Convention in 2021, Smith arrogantly suggested that accusations of liberalization of the SBC is coming from a few pastors from small, insignificant churches, and they ought to be roundly ignored. So this is Kevin Smith. This is the guy who supposedly just fired Brent Leatherwood and then now resigned. So this morning, the news was Kevin Smith resigned his position as the chair of the board or the trustee board at you get confused because there's the board of trustees and there's the executive committee. So I guess the executive committee, but he resigned that position this morning. And this is a guy who is clearly on the left in the SBC by SBC standards, clearly buying the CRT narrative stuff, called people who supported Trump in the SBC, you know, whores for Trump. This is not a guy that is firing Brent Leatherwood because Brent Leatherwood is too on the left. Is that fair to say? Is that a reasonable assumption? Unless he made a big turnaround. So that changes the way I think you look at this a bit. And so some people are saying, well, yeah, Kevin Smith wasn't happy. Like he must have been forced to do this. He just resigned, guys. I don't see how he was forced to do this. Something else I think is going on that's bigger or more important to the people who have an interest in this than just left-right stuff. And I think you just got to see it that way. And I don't mean to be the rain cloud here, but let's have a little sense, okay? Now, Megan Basham pointed this out, and I'm glad she did, because you had all these guys come out immediately, like Karen Swallow Pryor and Russell Moore, and they were so upset about Brent Leatherwood being booted from the ERLC. And who boosts the post from Russell Moore being angry about this? Well, a number of people: Juliet Kayyem, George Conway, Alyssa Farah Griffin, Jeffrey Evan Gold. And who are these people? Well, one is at CNN, Juliet Kayyem. George Conway is a contributor at The Atlantic. Alyssa Farah Griffin is a co-host, CNN political commentator, The View co-host. Jeffrey Evan Gold, attorney, legal analyst on CNN. This should tell you everything you want to know about who Russell Moore's friends are, who has a vested interest in the SBC continuing on a leftward trajectory. And it's those people in the media. It's the people that you look at that are totally pro-abortion, that are totally, you know, for open borders, that are for LGBTQ normalization in the worst ways. I mean, these are the people that support Russell Moore. These are the people that want someone like a Brent Leatherwood in charge of the ERLC. And so why Russell Moore reacted the way he did, I don't 100% know. I'm not in those discussions. There's a lot of possibilities. It could be that there was, he thought that there was something going on where maybe the right was flexing and getting rid of Brent Leatherwood. That seems to be the case. At least that's the reaction you see from Karen Swallow Pryor too. They seem to believe that they're ousting a good man for nefarious purposes, right? And I think that's enough to excite us. We think, oh man, like that's that. If they're upset, then you know that. And I would agree, actually, if they're upset, that there's probably something good happening. But just think through all the, come up with a paradigm that fits all the things that we're seeing. And if that doesn't, that paradigm does not fit everything that we're seeing. So this gives you all the information you need to know, though, about who's actually has a vested interest in pushing the SBC left. And then you had Bob Smietana at Religion News Service saying that Brent Leatherwood did the right thing, and that he attributes, or that Brent Leatherwood saying Biden did the right thing is the reason he was ousted. That's what he attributes it to. Melissa Brown from The Tennessean does the same basic thing. They blame it on his tweet about Biden, and we don't know if that was the thing. That might have been the opportunity. Could have been. I don't know. The Tennessee Holler, a far-right faction of the Southern Baptist Convention, just pushed out their policy arm leader for commending Biden. Yeah, Kevin Smith, far-right, far-right faction is Kevin Smith, right? Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't buy that that's exactly what's going on. John Whitehead, who is a trustee at the ERLC, said, well, I'm having trouble understanding how this is is possible. If Smith didn't have two supporters, there was no action. But the ERLC's first African-American board chair appears to be out, and the six-person committee is at four. Baptists deserve transparency. Who's in charge? And this is a good question, because the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission just made a statement, and they talked about their four, four committee board members, I suppose. And why aren't there six? I mean, this is someone who's a trustee asking this question, a trustee of the institution. That's crazy. A trustee doesn't even know what's going on. And Smith, I think it's important to note that, yeah, because of the fact that these are the same people who want diversity and are going to accuse you of racism if you criticize Kamala Harris, they're the same people who just countersignaled in the strongest terms Kevin Smith, who is Black, and pushed him to the point of resigning. So you just got the first Black chair of the ERLC's board out, So it's less diverse now, I guess. and I guess he's the one that Russell Moore was talking about, who was incompetent and evil. And, you know, this is the funny thing. Like, they'll say all these things. Who are they really talking about? I mean, Kevin Smith's the one that made this announcement. He says this, Kevin Smith: the trustees of the ERLC stewarded the entity on behalf of the Southern Baptists. In leading them, I made a consequential procedural mistake. The executive committee and other trustees are Christ-honoring volunteers who give much. The mistake was mine. I apologize. So he's taking the fall for it. He's taking responsibility and saying it was him. Brent Leatherwood says, I deeply appreciate everyone who reached out, especially our trustees who are absolutely bewildered at what took place yesterday and jumped in to set the record straight. More to come. So more to come. Brent Leatherwood's, I guess, they're going to have to explain. I mean, I don't know. How do you build trust back up again? You've just lost it. And at the same time, everyone's losing trust in the Democrat Party, our political system, the deep state. I mean, it's within a week and a half period. Who said like some days are weeks, some weeks are years or something like that? I mean, we've lived through a year in the last week and a half. So the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission reinstates Brent Leatherwood. Now, let's get to some other things. I want to talk a little bit about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, because the CRT is still being taught there. I mean, Jarvis Williams, I believe, is still a professor there. And of course, his writings are consistent with critical race theory. But it's more than just Jarvis Williams. And so I want to show something to you. Before we get there, though, any questions? We've been going over 50 minutes. Tina says, how can you praise Biden and be a Christian? I don't understand it all. Well, you have a serious moral judgments. I said, Aaron Redd tried to do this where he praised Biden for things that, you know, seem praiseworthy, I suppose, but you can't give like you can't look at his character and be like, hey, I'm going to praise that. I mean, I would say even, you know, with Trump's character itself, there are things like bravery would be one. There are things to praise, but there are also things like he doesn't seem to have a self-control over his mouth and what he says. There's a lot of problems there. And so I would say, you know, we need to be fair about everyone. But yeah, when it comes to the big picture, the battle that's being waged, there's no question. You can't, you need to pick a side. You can't just be in the middle. And Trump is representing the side that is opposing great wickedness and evil. And Biden has been the figurehead for that great wickedness and evil and allowing it to continue. I mean, he's an evil, evil man. All right. More questions. Let me know. There's a lot of comments coming in. Praising Biden cannot even be couched in Romans 13. The Evangelical Repugnant Leadership Club, ERLC. Thanks, Balaam. All right. Let's talk about this for a moment here. I'm going to play a short video for you. And I'm going to show you some material being taught in a class at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Now, some information about this class. It's an ethics class actually at Boyce College, which is at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. The professor is Dr. Bays, the program coordinator of Worldview and Apologetics and the co-director of the Augustine Honors Collegium. The textbook is Moral Choice by Scott Ray. And the most concerning chapter in this is probably chapter 15 on race, gender, and diversity. Now, this is what Dr. Bays had to say, and there was no, by the way, they're reading this, they're being quizzed on this. There has been no distancing or, you know, like read this critically yet in the class. So this is what you have from Dr. Bays of Boyce College. So I'm just going to play for you part of this clip.
Well, congratulations. You have made it to the final week. You can just go ahead and shut your laptop or your phone or your iPad or whatever you have off, and we can just sell. Actually, we can't do that just yet. We've got one.
I think it's important to say the final week. So opportunities to go and correct all the bad things that were just shoved into students' heads, it wouldn't be there. This is the final week.
One more issue to discuss, and it's a really important issue that I think is extremely relevant to contemporary society, and is one that Christians have to think clearly, carefully, and patiently about. So we're going to talk about race and immigration this week. And I put these together not because they are inherently in unison with one another, whereas issues of immigration are always issues of race and vice versa or anything. I think they're just really important issues that I didn't want to choose one over the other. I wanted both of them to be together, and I wanted them both to be in conversation because I think that they're both extremely relevant to issues, contemporary conversations, especially in politics and just writ large in general. Okay, so this week...
So they're not really connected, but they're both equally important. And that, no, come on. there's a reason that they're together.
You're going to have some biblical passages again to look at. And as you're thinking about race, gender, issues of diversity, issues of immigration, borders, border control, all of that I want us to have in the forefront of our minds when we reflect on race and immigration this week. It is extremely important that we start to at least begin to understand issues of race and issues of immigration, that we think through what it means for a nation to have borders. Is it good for a nation to have borders?
This guy has mastered the art that Al Mohler is so good at, of, and Russell Moore, by the way, of saying a lot of things, but not a lot of words. But not a lot is being said here.
Should they have borders? What does it mean for a nation to protect its borders? What does it mean for us to see on the news, or for us to see in the paper, or for us to see in our social media feeds, another minority young man who has been hurt or shot or killed by a police officer or by something else? How are we supposed to think about these issues? How are we supposed to think about them? How are we supposed to wrestle with these concepts? How are we supposed to wrestle with these experiences that we ourselves may never have, but that brothers and sisters in Christ have?
He just said the same thing four different ways. And in casual conversations, sometimes we can do that. In fact, sometimes it's important to say the same thing a little differently to get the point across. But he just said pretty much the same thing without a lot of inflection. Four times. Just want to point that out. I know I'm being nitpicky. I'm just so annoyed at the state of education. Like, this is a video that you prepared for a class that people are paying for. I don't know. Couldn't you script it or get some notes together, man?
How do we go about trying to understand them and trying to see them and trying to stand in solidarity with those struggles and those battles? How do we do that? How does reflecting on the moral life help us to do that?
There you have it. That's what that's the point of this, and that's what I wanted to get to. How does this, we're going to talk about race. Let me just summarize everything you just said. We're going to talk about issues of race and immigration. And we're doing this because we want you, when you watch the news and you see these things in the news from a admittedly slanted leftist viewpoint, where automatically a police officer shooting someone who is a minority signals racism. We won't challenge that necessarily, but we're going to put, that's part of this conversation. We want you to see all that and then stand in solidarity. Figure out how you stand in solidarity with those people. What people? Those, the people who are on the losing end of, I guess, our border policies and police policies and those kinds of things. That it's, this is couched in all of this language, but when you strip it all back, this is about being an activist in some way, shape, or form, and an activist slanted towards the left. How else do you interpret what you just heard? Okay, it's not as bad as it used to, and this is what I have said for a long time. Southeastern, I know, has done this. It was overt from like 2017, even 2015, but really from 2017 to 2020. It was overt at Southeastern, at Southern, CRT being pumped in. It's public. I mean, there's videos out there publicly for everyone to see. It went underground. Students at Southeastern weren't allowed to record in class anymore. It went underground. It's still there. I've said that. It's still there. That was a private video. This wasn't public. This was, well, I don't know. Private's not the word. It's not private. It is a public link, technically. But it's one that you can only access, I guess, if you are taking the course. So someone taking the course made it available more broadly, or at least notify people more broadly that it was available. Because if you have the link, it is public, it is available, it's on the internet. Sorry, it's available. I know that whenever, I mean, I did a whole 2-hour presentation for my patrons. You can go to patreon.com/worldviewconversation. I should probably mention that. I mean, I do another follow-up on this, by the way, but it was on slavery and apologetics. And so I did the same thing. I put a link up there, and I knew as soon as I put it up there, I'm like, this is public though. This is public. Even though I'm sending the link to certain people, it's going to be shared. I know it's going to get out there, and that's fine. But I specifically made it for those people. And so that's where this came from. So not revealing anything that wasn't technically public, but this is what you're getting at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And I want to show for you the textbook. This is the textbook that they are using for this particular class at Boyce College. And I got some quotes from it I want to read for you. How about this one from page 339? Those with gender dysphoria should accept their biological sex as one of the givens of life and deal with the incongruity that their gender experience as best they can. What seems clear is that the transgender person today would fit well in the category of the marginalized that Jesus went out of his way to include, leading with grace, but without affirming things that were contrary to the truth. This is exactly the same as Preston Sprinkle's teaching for crew. Same thing. You have this quote here from page 328. In applying these passages that address same-sex sexual relationships, it is important to make a distinction between same-sex attraction and same-sex sexual relations. This is particularly the case given that a person's sexual orientation is not normally something that is chosen. This is not to say it's necessarily genetic in its origin, which sometimes is what it is meant by the phrase, I was born this way. It can emerge developmentally and similar to many other traits. It is not a choice. Many same-sex attracted individuals maintain that they have never known a time in their lives when they were not same-sex attracted, which underscores the fact that the orientation is not usually chosen. As a general rule, people are held accountable only for those things that are conscious choices. Thus, the attraction, that's the key right there. You're only held accountable for a conscious choice. Thus, the attraction is normally not something for which people are morally culpable, though the orientation is a departure from the original design. However, the behavior which is chosen is something for which someone is morally accountable. So there you go. Soft pedaling, same-sex attraction. Same-sex attraction is not sinful. That's how you could summarize that entire paragraph. And transgender, that people who are transgender are marginalized, and Jesus would treat them as the marginalized of his day. That's what you just got from that. And then you have the CRT stuff. So here's some screenshots from the book itself. I'll just read for you some of this. The Black Lives Matter movement, founded by three African-American women in the aftermath of the Trayvon Martin shooting, the movement aims to building connections between Black people and our allies to fight anti-Black racism, to spark dialogue among Black people, and to facilitate the type of connections that are necessary to encourage social action engagement. Goes through some of the history, Ferguson, they are working to build, rebuild the Black liberation movements of the 60s and 70s. They argue their movement is a response to anti-Black racism. They began as a protest movement against unjust violence against Blacks by the police in some communities, but has grown to take on the ways Black people are rendered powerless by the state and culture. So there's an admission here that there's a legitimate concern that they have with these cases. And what are the cases used? Ferguson and Trayvon Martin, which we both know in both those cases. There isn't proof that this was a racism directed, you know, I don't even like using the word racism, a racially motivated reason for why these people were killed. The various causes they have taken up include poverty, incarceration rates, okay, all these quote unquote systemic things. They refused to speak out against the killing of police officers by Black shooters in Dallas and Baton Rouge. Their tactics are different from the earlier civil rights movement, and they have drawn criticism for being overly confrontational and divisive. So I guess that's the problem with them, right? They're just too confrontational and divisive. But their analysis, I mean, the problems they're reacting to, those are legitimate. Here's another paragraph. To be fair, many who use the term white privilege are not referring to economic privilege. Rather, white privilege often renders the advantage that comes with being in the majority. It refers to not having to be conscious of one's ethnicity and to the majority culture being seen as the norm. It brings advantage because the majority tends to be respected and trusted in ways that minorities often are not. Here's another section. It is helpful to distinguish between racism and racial prejudice, since they are two somewhat different things. Racial prejudice refers to negative stereotyping on the basis of race and or belief, and the particular race ethnicities are inferior to others. Racism is the combination of racial prejudice and the institutions of power in any given culture that enables a group to perpetuate patterns of discrimination. So there you go. That's the CRT stuff. That's, you know, racism is not racial prejudice. It's about systemic disparities. Essentially, that's what it is. And there's a problem with, you know, whiteness, really, white people setting the default settings, their culture, their thinking, European defaults. So you're getting this right now, currently, today, at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, at least at Boyce College, and you're not getting pushback. In fact, you're getting encouragement from the professor there. And that's the way it is. It's still that way. So what a shock, right? No, I don't buy that that's a shock. I think things have been pushed underground, but this is still there. And it probably will be there for years to come. And, you know, if you can complain to Al Mohler, I suppose, all day. I don't know. But this is that it's his institution, man. It's his institution. So in the light of current events, take all the things I've shared with you into account and be optimistic where you can, but be cautiously optimistic. And yeah, that's, I don't want to say anything more because I've already said it, but I will say in closing, last chance, by the way, to get questions in, but I will say in closing that if you are looking for a respite, a solid place to be with brothers who love the Lord, who are committed to the fidelity of the Word of God, who connections that you can make with them and rest and not have to worry about the tense political debates and frustrations that you're going to find at so many other places, whether it's the arguments over Christian nationalism or I don't even know. Because, I mean, we're all Christian nationalists, right? Now, I've never taken the term myself, but at this point, I mean, it's being applied to me so many times. You're not going to have the debate at this particular men's conference, and that is the Fundamentals Conference, of course. That's what I'm referring to. And if you go to fundamentalsconference.com, you can register. And there's a number of registration options for those who want to come, but I would really highly suggest coming. We're going to have a great time. Dr. Richard Bargas is our main speaker. A.D. Robles is going to be there. I'm going to be there. And we have great food, great fellowship, great fun. And you don't want to miss it. It's a great price too, by the way. I mean, you know, a lot of conferences, I'm finding this out now that I'm having to plan, be part of the planning of conferences for TruthScript. I've just found out it's so expensive. You would not believe what it costs to rent out somewhere like the Ark Encounter, you know, for a conference. It's insane in my mind. It's incredible. But what happens with these big conferences is they charge vendors a lot of money. And then of course you get charged when you show up, your parking ticket, food, some while you're at the conference, you're being charged for that if they provide it or you have to buy your own, but you got transportation costs getting there. Obviously they're not covering that. And then once you're there, you got a ticket for admission. Sometimes you get, I think the Shepherd's Conference is one of the best deals because you get a whole bunch of books back and stuff, and they got volunteers to offset some of that. But, you know, ultimately it is an expensive ordeal. And one of the things we've done with this is I only charge you for what the camp is telling me to charge. There's nothing is covering the administration. Nothing is covering honorariums for this. I either pay that myself or, you know, the church will pay that or help pay that or a combination of the two. We want to get this as low as possible. In fact, if you can't pay to come, we want to get you there somehow. Let me know. We can't pay for your plane ticket, but we'll give you a sponsorship if we can. If you want to sponsor someone, let me know. My email address is on fundamentalsconference.com because we want people to be there. We want the encouragement. It's for you guys. It's not, no one's making money. If anything, we're losing money when we do this kind of thing, but we want it for you because you need it. And it's just a wonderful gathering. We need it too. We need it too. And I'm saying me and the speakers and the church, my church that's helping host it. So check it out. Last call for questions. I see some comments. I only see one question. Eternal vigilance is the price we pay for Christian liberty. I don't know. I think I'm entering a discussion I don't understand, so I'm not even going to try. But maybe. Yeah, I guess I can see that. Well, God bless. More coming. Like I said, there is a Truth Script Tuesday tonight, 8 p.m. live stream. You can go on YouTube to Truth Script. I think it's just the channel is just Truth Script, or on iTunes, it's Truth Script Live, and you can check it out that way. And I'm going to be talking about my review of the movie Horizon. I'm going to be talking about, oh, what else? Just some of the other events that we talked about today, but I'm going to be reviewing some articles on it. So God bless. More coming by now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.